I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats, and when a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club, and I rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw, and I club it to death. I have done this both to lions and to bears. You may recognize this as the voice of David. He was a teenager when he said this. He was talking to the then king of Israel, Saul. He eventually became the next king after Saul, but he started off the low man on the totem pole in his family, taking care of the sheep. He was a shepherd, and he put himself in harm's way to care for that flock. Jesus as well had a flock, and Jesus' flock was in similar danger. It was a dark garden, and one of Jesus' disciples was coming with a band of men, and that was Judas, and Judas kissed Jesus, signaling, "This is the one that you are to capture and to take and arrest." And if you remember, one of the disciples fought back. He took out a sword and sliced off someone's ear until Jesus said, no, we're not fighting tonight. This isn't about fighting. And if you'll remember what Jesus' main concern was in that moment, if you've read it before, you'll probably remember what Jesus was most concerned about was the flock, the group of men standing around him. He said, "Let these men go." And that is to fulfill the scripture in Zechariah, which says, if you strike the shepherd, the sheep will scatter. And that's exactly what happened that night. On that night, it was every man for himself. The sheep scattered. On that night, Peter, this man who wanted to fight, I wanted to club those men to death, he ended up denying Jesus. How did he go from being a fighter to fleeing in just a few moments? Jesus knew this was going to happen. He knew this denial was coming. So in fact, earlier that night, Jesus had said to Peter previously, "So when you have repented and turned to me again," notice this word, he says, "strengthen your brothers." So Jesus knew what Peter was going to do, that he was going to deny him. And he said, when you have repented, when you have turned around, what I want you to do is to go back and strengthen your brothers. After Jesus' death, resurrection, before his ascension, though, he's preparing some fish for Peter and some of the other disciples. And Peter comes forward, and Peter has this conversation where Jesus asks Peter, "Do you love me?" And Peter says, "Yes, of course I love you." And Jesus says, "I want you to feed my lambs." And then Jesus asks him again, "Do you love me?" And Peter says, "Yes, I love you." And he says, "Well, I want you to take care of my sheep." And Jesus asks him a third time, and by this time, Peter's getting upset. "You know I love you. You know all things." And Jesus says, "Feed my sheep." So we could say that Jesus gave Peter one main job. He kind of gave him a one-point sermon, if you will. Take care of my sheep. Strengthen your brothers and sisters. I love the simplicity of this. A 3-to-5-word job description. You know, I wish my job description was 3 to 5 words. I think that's about all I can handle in my small brain. But this was a great job description for Peter. I love the simplicity of it, but did Peter know what he was getting himself into that day when he says, "Yes, of course I love you. I'll take care of the sheep"? Do you know sheep need more help than any other class of livestock? They can't take care of themselves. They need endless attention. They need meticulous care. Unlike a dog, they're not able to return home to remember where home is. Sometimes they eat unhealthy things, poisonous things. Sometimes they overgraze a pasture. The water for them has to be just right. It can't be flowing too fast. and it can't be stagnant. It can't be too hot and it can't be too cold. Like Goldilocks, it needs to be just right. They have to have themselves sheared by the shepherd because their wool creates this thing called lanolin, which is an oily substance. And so they have to be sheared. And even between shearing, sometimes the shepherds have to go in and shear various parts of them to keep them clean. Sheep are passive, they're defenseless, and they often flee in panic. Aren't you glad that God calls you a sheep? The shepherd has to be continually on alert. Joe mentioned in one of his last sermons that elders and pastors often have sleepless nights because we're worried about the people in our church that we care about. A shepherd has to be on that alert. But why would anyone want this job of a shepherd slash elder? Why would anyone want to place himself like David did in harm's way? Why would anyone want to place themselves like Jesus did in harm's way? Well, Peter was a fisherman, and he failed Jesus. But after that, he learned what it means to be a good shepherd, a good elder, how to take care of Jesus' sheep. And he shares that with the elders of Asia Minor. There's five regions in Asia Minor, and he's giving this letter called 1 Peter to these regions and to the churches there. We're going to look at it in 1 Peter 5, in verses 1 through 5. If you want to take one of the Bibles from underneath the pews there, underneath the chairs, every other seat has a Bible. It's page 1016. Page 1016. This is 1 Peter 5. We're going to look at verses 1 through 5. It's also in your take-home inside the bulletin if you want to take out the sheet of paper in the bulletin there. It's also on the screen. I want you to see if you can find what would motivate a man to take on the role of a shepherd as we read this. Peter says, "So I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God that is among you. Exercise oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you. Not for shameful gain, but eagerly. Not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory." We'll stop there for a moment. Why would a man put himself in harm's way to care for the flock? Well, Peter reminds us that the church is God's flock. That's the first fill-in, if you're filling in the blanks. The church is God's flock. That's found in verse 2. In verse 4, he reminds us that the chief shepherd is none other than Jesus. So as David served his father Jesse by caring for those sheep, so elders serve their heavenly Father by caring for the sheep. Jesus said to Peter, "Feed my lambs, take care of my sheep, feed my sheep." Jesus made it clear that Peter was to take care of his flock and God's flock. Now, though Peter isn't paying us any compliments by calling all of us sheep, we have to realize that Peter is using this as a term of endearment. This is Jesus' flock. Why is the flock dear to Jesus? In Acts 20 and verse 28, which we saw several weeks ago, it says that Jesus has purchased the flock with his own blood. So this flock is precious to Jesus. He gave his life for it. Elders and potential elders, our role starts with the recognition that this is not our flock, but this is the flock of God. This flock belongs to God. It is precious. It is his precious possession. And that's the first reason that a man would step up into this role and place himself in harm's way. Now, how does this flock of God concept speak to the rest of us? Well, I would say this. I believe it's your relationship to the flock that says a lot about your relationship with God, because it is His flock. The church is His special possession, the place where He, the chief shepherd, wants to disciple you and care for you. Whatever you do in relation to the church, or whatever you don't do in relationship to the church, I want to encourage you to be sure that you're being motivated by this highest motivation, that this thing called the flock of God is God's flock. It is not a man-made organization. It is God's flock. Every minute that you invest into God's flock, every dollar that you give toward God's flock, every person that you invite to join you into the flock, remember that you are building up the family of God. We would have to also say that the converse is true. If we don't invest our time, if we don't invest our money, if we don't invite people into the flock, then what are we doing? We're not building up the flock of God. And remember, this is God's special possession that we're building up or not building up. So that's the first thing I saw in the text. The second thing I saw in the text is, why would a man put himself in harm's way to care for the flock? Is this idea that shepherding is in our heritage. Shepherding goes way back, all the way into the Old Testament. In verse 1 here, Peter says that he is a fellow elder slash shepherd. He was told to shepherd God's flock. Jesus was also a shepherd. He saw the people as sheep, not having a shepherd, and he wanted to gather them like a mother hen does. He wanted to gather the people to himself, but it says his people, the Jewish people, would not be gathered as a whole to him. The synagogue of Jesus' day had elders. In fact, all the Jewish towns had elders. It goes all the way back to the Old Testament under Moses, where Moses was sitting all day long listening to all the problems of the people. They were coming to him, and there was a long line out the door. And Jethro, his father-in-law, came and said, "This is crazy. You got to do something about this." And God gave Moses the instructions to call forth elders, many, many, many elders, a plurality of elders, to sit and listen to the problems of the people, to help deal with the conflict and deal with the things that were happening with that group of people in the wilderness at that time. Now, why have God's people, from Moses till today, why have we needed shepherding? In 1 Peter, the same book, in chapter number 2, in verse 25, we sort of get our answer. It says, "For you were straying like sheep, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls." So we have this tendency, the hymn writer said, we're prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God that I love. We need a plurality of shepherds among us to care for us and appoint us primarily to the chief shepherd and overseer of our souls. Since the fall, we have needed this, and we still need it today. We shepherd, we elders shepherd, because God has ordained that we should continue this heritage as a part of the new flock that God is building, which is called the church. There's another thing I see in the text. Why else would a man put himself in harm's way to care for the flock? It's because the flock suffers. In verse number 1, Peter says that he is a witness of the sufferings of Christ. Peter witnessed, though from afar, he witnessed some of the sufferings of Christ. And now that Christ had ascended, he was witnessing the sufferings in the church as the church was being persecuted. Last week, we learned from Hebrews 13, in verse 13, that we must go to Christ outside the camp and bear the reproach that he endured. That speaks of suffering. In chapter 4 of this same book, 1 Peter, Peter tells us not to be surprised when the fiery trials come our way. He says that they are there to test us and test our faith. He says that we are sharing in the sufferings of Christ, that we are being insulted for the name of Jesus. And yet he says in all of this, we are glorifying God. Peter says it's not a strange thing that's happening to us. I love that language, and I also hate it, because when I go through suffering, I'm often saying, this is strange. What is this thing that is interrupting my blessedness in God, this trial of faith? I see it as strange. But Peter reminds me, and he reminds us, that God uses the fiery trials to purify us and to purify our faith. How many of us could testify this morning to trials that have purified our faith and made our faith more pure and caused us to draw to the chief shepherd? Peter also reminds us that God uses these trials to purify us, and he talks about how judgment begins in the house of the Lord. That Jesus is purifying this thing called the church, which is his bride. He's purifying this bride. He's not wasting any of the pain that you and I are going through right now. He's using it to purify us, all of us, the bride of Christ. Sometimes when I'm sitting over there and I'm worshiping along with all of you, sometimes there's a lyric that triggers something within me, because I know something of your journey, and I know something of your journey, and something of your journey, and something of your journey, and those lyrics trigger something deep within me. And I sit over there and begin to pray that lyric over you, and you, and you, and you. Why? Because I'm a great guy? No. Because God has designed that shepherds and elders have that kind of care for people. That is the work of God when that happens. And so if that happens to you when you're singing worship, and certainly the lyrics may trigger something about what you're going through, but they also may trigger something that you know the person sitting next to you is going through. Remember, that's a work of the Lord. Lean into that and pray in that moment for that person. Can I just say something also on the side of this? When the fiery trials come, you will be glad that you are a part of a flock. One day I was watching in my backyard, and there was a bunch of turkeys, as often will happen in my yard and in my area, and I saw a fox come, and he made his way into the yard, and he started circling those turkeys. You know what? That group of turkeys was stronger together than they would have been if there was just one or two of them. And they somehow eluded the fox and were able to fly off. I bet they were glad that they were part of a flock that day. And I want to encourage you right now, maybe you have just tipped your toes into the water of the church. I want to encourage you. Now, maybe you're not going through a fiery trial, but there's a fiery trial coming, and I want to encourage you to get in the water, start making your way to the deep end in this thing called the church, because you will be glad when the fiery trials come that you have a group of brothers and sisters who have your back, who will be there and be the hands and feet of Christ to you. All right, so there's other things I saw in the text, so we'll have to move on here. Why else would a man put himself in harm's way to care for the flock? Well, in verse 1, I think we see that the flock is headed to greener pastures. We are headed to greener pastures. In verse 1, Peter says that he's a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed. Peter had already experienced the transfiguration, where Jesus was on the mount there, and he saw Jesus in at least part of his glory. But Peter knew that there was more to see, that there was more to come of Jesus' glory. The chief shepherd of Psalm 23 makes us lie down in green pastures. He leads us beside the still waters. And he says, we will dwell in the house of the Lord, what? Forever. That's what Peter's talking about. We're going to be partakers in the glory to come. We will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Until we get to the greener pastures of eternity, we need Jesus under shepherds. Elders and shepherds, to guide us into the greener pastures of his word in the here and now. But we know that we're headed to another city. This is not our city. We're headed to another city whose builder and maker is God. And so that's why a man would step up to this kind of role, because he knows we're headed somewhere. We're headed to be with our Heavenly Father. And there's one last reason I believe a man would put himself in harm's way to care for the flock. That comes right out of the text in verse number 4. I would say it this way: the reward will never fade. The reward will never fade. Back in those times, they had something of the Olympic Games where they had athletic contests, and at the end, if you won the particular athletic contest, they would put a wreath on your head. It was normally, from what I understand, a crown that was leafy and kind of a wreath that would eventually fade. Peter says here that we're going to receive a crown that will never fade. Back in 1 Peter 1 and verse 4, Peter says of our salvation that it's an inheritance, that it's imperishable, that it's undefilable, that it's unfading, and that it's kept in heaven for us. Here in verse 4, he says when the chief shepherd appears, that the elders will receive, in addition to salvation, this thing called an unfading crown of glory. I like what one commentator said. He said the full expression of a shepherd's eternal glorious crown will be in proportion to his faithful service on earth. So the way we serve the Lord in the small things here on earth, the Lord rewards us in heaven. In heaven, there is greater service for elders and shepherds, and there is joy awaiting those shepherds who have been faithful here on earth. So we don't do this to get a crown here. We do it to get a crown there. We elders care for the flock because we want to hear Jesus say to us, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." You know, when I was a kid, I used to play in the backyard with my dad. You know, he used to say all kinds of great things about how I could throw the football or how I could throw a baseball. And I think he did that until my head got like this big. And then I think he stopped at some point, it seemed like, when I became a teenager. The other day, my dad's not very verbal. He doesn't use a lot of words. And so he said something to me, and he said something that was a compliment. And it stood out in a moment, and it grabbed my attention. It stopped me in my tracks. You know, it feels good to be praised by your father. It feels good to be praised by your mother, doesn't it? How much more so to hear that commendation from our Heavenly Father when he says, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." All of us have that opportunity, but here it specifically points to the elders who receive this unfading crown of glory because of their faithful service to the Lord. Okay, so now we know why shepherds care for the flock, but how do shepherds care for the flock? Well, first of all, they exercise oversight. In verse number 2, we see that. Another way to say exercise oversight is to say that they watch over. On a macro level, elders watch over the entire flock. They're watching what's going on with the flock. They're watching over the different interactions of different parts of the flock. They're watching over the ministry leaders. They're watching over the organizational aspects of the church, which, by the way, have gotten more and more complicated through the years. I started back in the 1990s in ministry, and things have gotten a lot more complicated since then. In Acts, we see that the elders had to deal with or exercise oversight about these widows who were being neglected in the food distribution. The elders had to act. Now, they didn't go in and solve all the problems, but they exercised oversight over that and gave direction to the flock to deal with that particular issue. So they watch over from a macro standpoint, but they also watch over from a micro standpoint. They watch over individuals. They watch over families. They teach the word. They are examples of the word. They ensure that the structure of the church provides the care that all of us need as sheep. In the last 3 sermons, I think we have well covered this aspect, so I'm going to move on. Why else would shepherds care for the flock? Or how else would shepherds care for the flock? In verse number 2, he says we ought to do it willingly. We ought to willingly care. There's a contrast here. Willing care and caring under compulsion. Compulsion is I care because I have to care. This is my job. I'm a shepherd, so I have to care for the sheep. Okay, I get up on Monday morning, I have to care for the sheep, and Tuesday and Wednesday. That's under compulsion. But Peter's talking about something different. He's talking about doing this willingly. I care because I want to care. In 1 Peter 1 and verse 22, Peter talks about sincere brotherly love, and he says that it comes from a pure heart. Where else would brotherly love come from? We have been born into a new family. We have brotherly love for one another. We willingly care for one another because we are family members, and that's what families do. Peter reminds us that the kind of love that he's talking about comes from a pure heart. Now, where does a pure heart come from? Well, here in the text, it says, we are willingly to care for the flock. Now, catch this, this is important. As God would have us. As God would have us. Let's face it, as an elder, I am not going to willingly care for you of my own volition 100% of the time. If I'm going to love you, it is going to have to be because God wills me to love you. So the origin of the care that you receive in the church is not human. It comes from God. It's God's love that is channeled through the body and also channeled through elders and shepherds to the body. I willingly care for you because God is willing me to do it, not because I'm willing myself. What's the application to the whole church here? You might say, I don't feel like caring for others sometimes. I have too much of my own stuff going on to care about other people. You know, that person is difficult to care for. Peter reminds us that it's not about white knuckling and saying, okay, I'm going to willingly care for that person now. He reminds us that God is the one who wills us, is as God would have us, and God is the one that motivates us to willingly love one another. If you find yourself in a place of apathy toward the body, the flock, ask God to give you a heart, a pure heart, that will willingly serve the other people in the flock. All right, how do shepherds care for the flock? They willingly care, and then he says they eagerly care in verse number 2. There's a contrast here between eagerly caring and doing it for shameful gain, or the text that I read as a child called it filthy lucre. Filthy lucre. Elders in that time apparently handled some of the money. So it would be important. The elders are not supposed to care for people. Get this. They're not supposed to care for people so that the people will give more money in the plate. That is not the motivation. That's not the reason that elders are supposed to care for people. The elders are also not supposed to funnel the money that comes into the church only for themselves. Now, some of the elders would have been vocational ministers and they would have received compensation as such, but they're not supposed to channel it only for themselves, but also for the needs of the flock. Some elders, like I said, did get paid. Yes, elders, you may get paid as you care for the flock, but I think what Peter is saying is don't focus on what you're going to get out of ministry, but focus on what you are going to put into ministry, what you're going to give. And Peter says what you're going to give is care. You're going to tend the flock. Now, I do have to mention something here that's often not mentioned in church. There is a power differential between elders and shepherds and the flock. It's not because we want there to be a power differential. There just is. Shepherds in the church tend to know who all the people are, which gives them more power. We often have the respect of many of the people in the church, which gives us power. We also have positional power as elders and shepherds in the church. We've been given a title, a position. Okay, here Peter tells us we're not supposed to use that power for our own benefit, like seeking preferential treatment. Because I have this position, I want you to treat me preferentially, or I want you to give me gifts because I am your pastor elder. Or I'm not supposed to seek ways to benefit myself financially from the flock, other than receiving a just compensation. Today, we have pastors that sell their CDs and sell their books and receive speaking fees or honorariums for special services that they might do, like weddings and funerals. And I suppose there's nothing wrong with that. But as one commentator warned, it is easy for elders and pastors to prostitute our calling from the Lord for shameful gain. And that's what Peter's talking about here. I believe it's all in our motivation. Why are we doing what we're doing? Peter says, if you're doing this for the money, you are in the wrong job. You need to get yourself out of there. That's not what being an elder is about. We'll move on. How do I, as a shepherd, care for the flock? It says I need to willingly care, I need to eagerly care, and then it says I also need to be an example. In verse number 3, it says this. There's a contrast here between being an example and not domineering or lording it over the flock. We are to be example to those in our charge, those among us, those assigned to our care. So as a pastor elder, I'm not responsible for the Catholic Church, the universal church. I'm responsible for this congregation. I'm responsible for a group within this congregation. Elders in those days might have watched over a geographical area or a geographical area of churches. They might have within their own congregations have had specific families that they watched over. Here, we do it by alphabetical order. It's just one way to do it, not the right way or the best way. It's a way to do it. We break up the congregation into alphabetical groups, and we place an elder over those groups. There's many different ways that we can be an example to the flock and those who are among our care. But the main point here is that we are to be examples to those who we are assigned to be examples to. As a church grows, a particular elder can't know everyone in the church, and he cannot maybe be an example to everyone in the church, but he can be an example to a smaller group of the flock. This is also a great reminder that as an elder, my greatest contribution is likely not going to be in a boardroom where I make decisions on what happens with the church. But it's going to be in the example and the way that I lead and the way that I work with the sheep. I don't have to preach like Apollos. I can't do that. I can't write like the Apostle Paul. All I can do and all the other elders can do and potential elders in this room can do is to be an example, to be ourselves and to follow Christ and to ask you to follow us as we follow Christ. You might say, I'm not an elder. Why have we had 3 messages on what it means to be an elder? Great question. I'm glad you asked. The Bible says that sheep know the voice of their shepherd. It's talking about Jesus. But would we not also want to know the voice of the under-shepherds that Jesus has placed in our care or to care for us? We should know what the role of an elder is. We should know how they're supposed to fulfill those roles and how they fulfill them. And as Pastor Joe said, you may need to hold us accountable every once in a while to these things. Okay, so now that we got that settled, if elders are to care for the flock of God, what is the flock to do? Likewise, look at verse number 5. Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Look at that word likewise there. Just as under-shepherds submit to the chief shepherd, so congregations must also submit to the chief shepherd, and by extension, the under-shepherds that Jesus has placed to care for them. Why does Peter call out the young people to submit? It's a great question. Well, we know that some of the younger men tended to be chosen for other serving roles in the church. Some of the younger than elders were deacons or led other ministries within the church. So Peter could be saying to those younger men, stay in your role and follow your leaders. Younger people, we know from experience, ourselves included, can be headstrong and resistant. Peter could be asking all of the younger people in the church to get in line behind their leaders. Just because he calls out the younger people doesn't mean that the rest of us are exempt. I'm over 40 now, so do I not need to submit to the elders? It could be that Peter calls out the younger because submission in this culture would have come more easily to the older and more mature people. We may not know exactly why Peter called out the young people, but those are some ideas. The idea of being subject to is a theme in 1 Peter. We're told to be subject to human institutions, like government. As employees, we're told to be subject to our employers, wives to their husbands, to respect their husbands, and elders to come under the chief shepherd. So this idea of being subject is not new in 1 Peter. He said it a number of times. It means to accept the authority of. And so if the role of the elders is to care for the flock, then I would say it's the role of the rest of the church, the rest of the flock, to accept the authority of those that God has placed in charge, or to flock to that care. If we're supposed to care for the flock, then what's the flock to do? We're supposed to flock to the care. When I thought about what does that mean, I automatically thought of an example of what it doesn't mean. One day, a woman came to me in the church I was a part of, and she stood like this far away from my face, and she began to tell me why I wasn't a good pastor, and why the elders of my church weren't good elders, and why this didn't work, and that didn't work, and this didn't work. And she had a very specific thing she was upset about, that some need of hers wasn't taken care of. And I asked her, I said, have you ever brought this up to an elder? She said, no. Okay. How do you expect the elders to know that you have this need if you don't let them know? Oh, you know, that church, we had small groups, and the small group leaders were shepherding people. They were to shepherd the flock of God under the under-shepherds, the shepherds and elders. I asked, you're part of the small group, and I know you have these relationships in the small group. Have you told your small group? No, I haven't. Okay, that person huffed off, you know, left in a huff. But I would submit, as much as I took that on the shoulder that day and tried to think about my own motivations as a pastor, I had to wonder, is this person willing to flock to the care that is in the church? And it's a question you need to ask yourself. Are you prepared to flock to the care? We have to be careful about insisting that the elders care for us in the way that we want to be cared for. Meanwhile, we're unwilling to flock to the care and make it more difficult for them by not being open, by not being vulnerable, by not asking for help when we need it, and not taking advantage of the care that the church does offer. Peter here links the caring of the flock and the flocking of the care with one word. And if you forget everything I already said, can you remember this one thing? What links the caring for the flock and the flocking to the care? It's one word. It's humility. 1 Peter 3 and verse 8 says we ought to have unity of mind, we ought to have sympathy, we ought to have brotherly love, we ought to have tender love, we ought to be of a humble mind. So this isn't new. Peter's already told them this. He is telling us the leaders need humility and the people in the church, the flock, needs humility. Submitting was seen as a weakness in the first century. It's seen as a weakness today, isn't it? We can only help to care for each other and be cared for by one another if we clothe ourselves first in humility. So every time we interact with the flock, we ought to be asking ourselves this question. Am I clothed in humility? Did I put my humble clothes on before I interacted with anybody in the church this week? Is humility really that big of a deal? Yes, it is. It says God will oppose the proud, but he'll give grace to the humble. So elders, former elders, potential elders, do you want God to oppose you? Sheep, do you want God to oppose you? We need to take on that garment of humility. And the imagery here is to tie it up on our waist. That's what they did back in those days. It's like a servant taking on the servant apron and tying it upon their waist so it doesn't fall off. We tie ourselves up with humility. This is what Jesus did. That is how he served us. He did it in humility. He exercised oversight, yes. He saw us in our sin, and he obeyed the will of the Father to make a way for us. He willingly died for us, not because he had to, but because he wanted to please the Father. He eagerly placed himself in harm's way when he realized that he had to drink the cup of God's wrath for us. He did it not to lord over us, but he took on the form of a servant, and he served us the bread, and he served us the wine. That's what makes him the chief shepherd. That's how it shows us that he's the chief shepherd. This is the one. This is the Messiah. This is the one we've been waiting for, the one who lays down his life for the sheep. That's what makes him a greater shepherd than even David, who killed lions and killed bears. I mean, can we even wrap our minds around that? Jesus is a greater shepherd than David. He cares for his sheep better than David ever could. David stepped in front of a lion and the bear, but Jesus stood toe-to-toe with your sin. Jesus absorbed the wrath of the Father on our behalf. Praise be to God. Praise be to God. We have this table set before us. We call it the Lord's Supper. And the ushers are going to come forward now, and we're going to receive the bread, and we're going to receive the fruit of the vine,